Want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily, then distribute it everywhere and even earn money. We like that. All in one place for totally free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters. And here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your cellular telephone or your computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else, those other places that podcasts are heard.
Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. And when you want to take conversations with your fans to the next level, Q&As and polls are the best way to get them talking. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free. Zero catch. We've been using it ever since we started How Long Gone. And ever since I discovered Spotify for Podcasters, I feel like having the option of turning off the Q&As and the polls on the user dashboard has really helped boost my creativity and take it to another level. I highly recommend giving it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Oh, what up, big dog? I'm pretty good. Insane morning that I can't really talk about, so I will just leave you hanging there.
Okay, we'll have to talk about your insanity day offline.
I love talking offline with you.
I'm just in the middle of shipping out some more t-shirts.
Yes, the How Long Gone merchandise portal.
The portal is pumping. I'm really starting to get the hang of shipping, while also really starting to get sick of shipping.
Well, that's the thing with skills, Jason. You know, once you get really good at them, you don't like them anymore. But that doesn't mean you should stop.
Interesting. I mostly shouldn't stop so that you don't have to do it.
Jason, look, I've been shipping t-shirts since before you were born, okay? And, you know, I'm very good at it, but I don't have access to a printer right now. I mean, I don't mind doing it. I actually find it somewhat meditative.
I do too, actually. I am actually kind of enjoying it, and I am using lots of great resources thanks to my friends at the local Glendale UPS UPS store. They love supporting the team.
They're fans of the show, I'm sure.
They're fans of the show. They love to maybe look the other way when it comes to exorbitant charges or, you know, free shipping materials being handed over, you know, without even thinking about it.
Do they just know Big Dog from the neighborhood, or like, are you just a good customer?
I think I'm just probably one of the only people that might be nice to them and treats them like a normal human being or something like that. Because when I come in, they're just like, "What's up, bro?" Like they're really jazzed. So maybe everyone in the neighborhood is just, you know, treats them like the help. That's not how I like to conduct my business, though.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I actually, when I was in Atlanta, I went to the local UPS store near my parents' house, and I had an incredible experience. Like it was the most seamless and excellent experience in a realm that is usually terrifying and awful. And I complimented them, and then I realized, they're like, "Oh, we're helping out because of COVID. That's our son. Our son owns this franchise, and his mom and dad were in there helping him." And the guy was probably 30.
Damn,
it was very cool.
How the rich get richer.
Speaking of the rich getting richer, let's talk about Jake Paul.
I'm glad you brought that up. I have been, you know, Jake Paul is not somebody that I ever check for.
That's your loss, loser. That's why your big ass ain't getting invited to that fucking hype house, and I am.
But once you arrive, you're not going to do the cool stuff that I would do, like engage in a game of beer pong or, you know, take some shots of 1942 like it's nothing. You know, that's the type of stuff that I'm going to be doing at Jake Paul's Calabasas mansion. And whereas you will maybe be, you know, asking them what brand of water Jake has in the fridge and then turning your nose up at the result.
Actually, I think what I would be doing is leaving with four new clients, all with makeup deals from companies we've never heard of is actually what I'd be doing. But that's fine. Either way, I'm winning.
So you would find four new clients and they would let you then manage their social media accounts, I'm assuming? Or how does what is that the, one of the services that we're offering?
Well, probably what I would do is I would manage their career and then I'd farm out the social media services to someone a little less qualified like yourself to handle that side of the business.
Damn, dude, bro, it's an honor to be to be scheduling your Snapchats. Bro, like, bro, I think, like, bro, I won't let you down, man.
Bro, I mean this seriously. I mean this, like, dead serious. Like, it really means a lot to me that I get to press, like, send. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah, it's cool. I get access to, like, this 9-year-old's DMs, and I can see, like, all the, you know, a peek behind the curtain and everything. And it's fucking exciting, man. I think it's a good look.
It is a good look because, Jason, you know, we all have to start somewhere, you know, and if the mailroom at CAA is closed, then fucking cleaning Jake Paul's sniper rifle is a great job.
Well, what I want to know is, okay, because, like, he got in trouble, I saw, because, you know, he's always getting in trouble for something. He had a big house party that had, like, a forklift there, and then sick. He would so have, sick. Like, drunk college kids like hanging off of the edge of the forklift, and then he would lift it up and he would just fling their 17-year-old bodies around a backyard, and then the neighbors would complain about noise, and then
who's the neighbors?
He got no neighbors in Calabasas, and then he got in trouble because he wasn't paying, he like owed millions in taxes. And then
whatever, God.
And then he got popped for like looting or trespassing during the protest in Scottsdale, Arizona. But, you know, Jake Paul is the Scottsdale of people, I would say. But well, like, what do you have to do to get, you know, the military to show up, like, you know, like a tank of Marines, you know, dozens of them, to pull up and basically bust your gate down and raid your shit with AR-15s. What are you doing to get that type of action? Like, is it going to be some like crazy ass shit?
I've heard that he is possibly selling drugs and also possibly trafficking like pornography underage.
And you have heard these from your insider sources, or is this Page Six gossip? How rock solid are these claims that you're making?
Every claim I make is rock solid. That's a cornerstone of my brand.
Okay. Can you reveal your sources is what I'm asking.
This information is out there is all I'll say.
Okay. So he might be selling drugs, moving guns, child porn?
Child porn in the way that it's like he might have sex with a 16-year-old. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right,
I don't,
right.
I don't think, but what I think is actually happens with guys like this, like white suburban guys, no shots at myself or you. But I think he's like rich, but it's like not cool enough anymore. So he has this fantasy of doing something actually illegal, which is what he's doing now. Like, I think like having crazy guns and selling drugs when you don't need to is purely like a I want to be someone I'm not, even though I'm rich. It's like boring now. I need more.
Do you think this is a classified disorder, or is this something that's emerging right now? Like, and will it be named after somebody like Lou Gehrig's disease or something? Will it be
Jake Paul disease?
Because he's not the first person to do, you know, Bieber and Chris Brown, bless his heart. You know, these people are talented content creators who have millions of dollars and fans and all that stuff. Not good enough. They have to do crimes. They have to break the law. They got to be bad boys or bad girls or bad people just to get a thrill. You know, he could be suffering from that.
He's definitely suffering from that. I mean, if he went to Japan and basically, you know,
yeah,
committed like an unspeakable crime to, you know, culturally.
Mm-hmm.
But what's, I mean,
he was doing some graveyard pranks.
Exactly. But Jason, as we both know, what's more thrilling than moving a fucking brick. You know what I'm saying? What's more thrilling than getting 18.5 for the low, tell them holler? You know what I mean? What is better than that, Jason? As a former drug dealer, I'm sure you could give us some insight.
Yeah, the feeling of moving, 16 zips across state lines and getting away with it is... You can't put it into words.
By 16 zips, Jason means meeting a guy that looks like Logan Paul in a parking lot and giving him a bag of oregano for $100 in Huntington Beach.
Yeah, the zip means, ounces in other places of the world, but in Orange County, it does mean a gram of mid, and it is in exchange for some type of, like, it's the money is not being exchanged. I'm getting like a nice assortment of like board shorts and like and some tanks and stuff like that.
Bro, look. I stole this shit from Hurley. I'll trade you for a bag of it.
This may or may not have fallen off the back of a Volcom truck. We don't want to, I don't want to get into the details, but yeah, it's new shit.
I hate you.
Do we want Jake Paul to go to jail, federal prison for decades? What will that do for the world? Will that make other people think twice before they behave this way, or nothing will change?
Bro, hell no, man, hell no. White people wanting to commit crimes to feel cooler is too deeply embedded in our culture.
Yeah.
Like Jake Paul, the reason it's so problematic is because Jake Paul doesn't need to do it. When you're committing crimes because you're destitute and you've been oppressed for 200 years, then that to me is a very different situation than a white guy being like, look at these guns I got, baby. Mm-hmm. I sold, it doesn't add up. It's not the same.
Yeah, he doesn't have any kids at home crying all alone on the bedroom floor because they're hungry. And the only way to feed him is to... sell a sniper rifle for a little bit of money to pay the Calabasas rent.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's all like depressing cosplay of like him watching Goodfellas too many times.
Do you think there's a decent chance that him and his team are excited about this, in a way to spin it to get him some more street cred? Like he's looking forward to becoming like a real actual criminal to get the respect from Kodak Black and
Jason,
like
a YouTube. No one's ever going to respect a YouTuber. That's the bottom line. Like you could be like, oh, you make bank. That's cool. You're making a lot of money, but respect, I don't think is a word that gets thrown around in the YouTube community that often.
I don't think that he is necessarily going to get the respect, but he might think that this could be an opportunity to get one, to get respect.
Well, he is dumb. So that is quite possible. And I think his team is like his parents. So who knows?
Don't come for team. What is it? Team 10? Tap 10?
I think it is. Yeah. I mean, honestly, we should know more about this stuff, but
no,
I don't care.
Not really.
Well, as esteemed members of the media, I feel like this is an important subject that gets brought up a lot.
Yeah. We don't want to know about it, but it's part of our job.
Exactly. So that's what we know about. Doing. I mean, we know enough, I think.
Hopefully he does get life in prison and maybe we'll have like some kind of cool party or celebration for it.
The fact that
maybe he will get suicided, you know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna get invited to a hype house style party before I leave Los Angeles. That's my only goal.
Are you gonna attend it though?
Hell yeah, baby. I'll put on my mask. I'm turning up.
They're going to think that you're someone's dad, though. You know that?
Bitch, I don't care. They don't need to know what I'm doing there. I'm the ops, baby. I'm just in there checking it out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I need to know what these guys are doing.
Undercover black.
Yeah, I'm undercover, but it's for the culture. I would never call the feds.
Are you going to tell people that you work for Instagram?
No.
That you...
Maybe.
That you, you're there to hand out beta testing accounts for Instagram Reels.
Dan, that's a good idea, actually, for us to go undercover. That's how we should go to the to Hillsong. We pull up in the Range Rover and say we're there from Instagram to introduce the church to Reels.
We have an exciting opportunity for you and your parish.
Hi, I am Jason, and this is my colleague, Chris. We have an interesting opportunity for your parish to grow its viewership on the platform Instagram.
It's going to be like Jehovah's Witness, but we got Yeezys on.
Yeah, we come to your door, right? But we drip in.
So it's Jehovah's Fit Picks is what we are.
That's a good idea. Damn, we're just giving this shit away. It's bullshit.
I know.
Co-host Jason, we do have a guest today, a friend of mine from the great city of New York. Her name is Caitlin Thompson. She is the co-founder of Racket, the best magazine about tennis that exists. And she also co-hosts the Racket Magazine podcast that is quite popular in the community as well. We were getting so many questions from you idiots about tennis, and Jason and I are merely amateurs. Mm-hmm. So we thought it'd be better to bring on an expert and just really grill her about the sport, the gear, you know, what we should be doing as players. Mm-hmm. You know, just get some inside tips.
Yeah, you asked for a trusted source from Big Tennis, and we deliver.
We deliver Big Tennis, and Agassi said he would come on next week, but he was like a little unavailable. So Caitlin is filling in.
All right, let's give her a call, please.
Okay.
Hey there, overwhelmed foodies. Are you drowning in a sea of meal kit options, feeling like you're in a bad dating game where every contestant looks the same? Fear not, because amidst the chaos, there's one shining star worth your culinary affection. Home Chef is not just another fish in the meal kit sea. They're the gourmet catch that you've been dreaming of. Say goodbye to swiping left on lackluster meals and swipe right for the one brand that will make your taste buds swoon.
Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef design recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, I like to chop myself, or quick microwave meals that are assembled in minutes, Home Chef has you and your entire family covered for delicious meals, 30 options per week, and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. I'm keto now. Not only is it convenient, but it is also economical. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Mamma mia.
For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners, our listeners, 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/howlong. That's homechef.com/howlong for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/howlong. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. I compromise every day, Jason, as you know, because that's kind of part of being a good friend and partner.
Oh, wow.
I am forced to keep food in my refrigerator against my will because my wife demands it. But when it comes to your health, Jason, there's absolutely no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, or their crossword puzzles just because they're available right now or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. I know you have sketchy insurance, Jason. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and most importantly, prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All these doctors are real with verified reviews from actual patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists near you, or if you want to book one far away from you, that's your decision. Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That is ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Booking.com. Booking.yeah. From cozy bed and breakfast to trendy boutique hotels, with so many choices across the beautiful United States of America, you can book whoever you want to be. That can look like booking a 5-star hotel to indulge your luxury side, that's me, or booking a remote cabin in the woods to explore your adventurous side.
So spring has sprung, the sun is out, the sun is shining, I can't wait to get to New York. Check out Booking.com for your ideal hotel or vacation home, no matter where you go in the U.S.
Booking.yeah.
Book whoever you want to be on Booking.com. Booking.yeah.
I put a shirt on for you today, pussy.
I'm glad we're recording that. thank you for finally putting a shirt on.
It's the least I could do, because if I'm going to do that, you should be paying me $5 a month.
It's a shame, because I do really like capturing the organic moment where our host discovers that you record these shows with the titties out. But yeah, sounds good. Are you an actual long-term listener, Kaylin?
I mean, as long as you've been around, so.
That is pretty long.
That is pretty long. I mean, life.
What are we, like 40 episodes in or something, guys?
Oh. I thought you said long-time listener. We're at 63.
Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, I guess having like a kid and a full-time job just is eating up my listening time.
We don't.
Chris has a full-time job, and I have a kid, and we're podcasting with him.
So. It's no problem for us. Are you in New York?
At this very precise moment, I'm in coastal New Jersey. My son is theoretically in a outdoor YMCA camp here all week, where my mother-in-law has a little beach pad. However, there was a hurricane and it knocked out power. So we are here for no reason, basically.
If Jersey couldn't get any worse, now we got no fucking juice too, huh?
That's
it's
rough.
Pretty True Detective season one.
But power's out in New York too, right? It's like pretty bad everywhere.
Parts of New York. I don't know. My wife is in the city because she runs an island in New York City and she can't really leave.
I'm sorry. So, what did you just say? She runs an island?
She does. That's a little bit of a flex, but she runs Governor's Island, you know, which is like kind of like an arc.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that phrasing, though. That's a really nice way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, I was wondering if it was going to be like an Island Records type of play on words, but Governor's Island. Didn't they have like a music festival there or something a while ago?
Governor's Ball.
Governor's Ball, right.
Gov Ball.
I asked her why they didn't. They don't have it anymore.
I think it's from COVID. Just kidding.
I guess it turns out if you have an EDM festival, the deaths just pile up.
Yeah, Jason.
How dare
Jason
you?
Jason knows, as a member of the EDM community, Jason's very familiar with all the deaths surrounding the culture.
Yeah, but our ravers are dying doing what they love. They're not getting fucking murdered. They're not getting shot. They are fucking overdosing on bad ketamine the way that they intended to do it.
Exactly. We
should all be so lucky.
That's personal freedom at its best, in my opinion. That's what personal freedom really means. You know?
My body, my rules.
Exactly.
Ketamine overdose.
Exactly. So how has the quarantine, are you a teacher now?
Yeah, that's a new skill that I added to my skill set.
Mrs. T.
How is it going?
I'll be honest with you. My kid is having the time of his life.
How old is he?
He's just turned 6. So he's been in kindergarten for the last couple months. And now he's obviously in some sort of summer. I don't call it summer vacation. It's sort of, you know, time and definitions have sort of lost their meaning. But he is having a great time. He has the attention of two moms, a grandma and an aunt, my sister who lives in the city. So he's like wall-to-wall adult attention, which as an only child who's like pretty nerdy, he's fucking like he's now, reading. He's now, so into it.
Is this nerddom – now, is that something that you would fault yourself with, or do you look at this as a positive?
I mean, he has no – first of all, from a maintenance perspective, if you were to tell me – when I saw the penis on the sonogram, I'll be totally honest. I was like, what the fuck? Because I don't know how to approach this mentally.
Yeah, you want to smash that pee-pee patriarchy.
Penises in general, or you mean a child with one?
Well, I mean, more of the latter. The thought of a penis doesn't like repulse me in theory, but more just like, how could we possibly be having a boy? This doesn't make any sense. Like we got the wrong test result. Like kind of that feeling, you know?
They do that for you. It's like the way they would a womanizer, you know, hits 50 and finally has a child and it's a girl, you know, and it throws him. It gives him a existential crisis about how he's treated women his whole life.
Yeah, God, Jesus Christ, deliver us the challenges that we need in life, not the ones that we want.
Exactly.
Yeah,
It was a then you carried me moment. For me. I was kind of like,
who raised who at the end?
Who was raising
so you? Exactly so right. Your child has many, many parental units, all female though. How are we feeling about that? And I don't mean that in a sexist way whatsoever.
No, it's interesting. I feel a way about it because mm-hmm. I try to get him some male influence as often as possible.
Is that so why I'm you wanted to come on this pod?
That's the selling point. I think we're going to talk about that, right? That's what our...
Well, Uncle Chris is available. Uncle Chris is available at all times to talk about like sneakers and women, you know, important stuff. You know, from a male perspective.
And he will throw the old, he will play catch or throw the baseball around if you can secure the Bottega Veneta catcher's glove.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a bro-y activity. Well, I was asking because I was raised by all females and I did not turn out so great. So just a word of caution,
didn't,
you know.
Didn't you?
I disagree, Jason. I think you have a pretty good. I think you have.
No,
a pretty,
I was being sarcastic.
I think you have a pretty nice way about you, though. But I never thought about that because my dad was pretty. I mean, my parents were like equally involved in my life in a way that I feel like doesn't happen anymore.
In a good way.
I mean, I had the most idyllic upbringing. Like, I feel bad about it sometimes.
You're like, I don't want to rub it in.
Yeah, any Chris trauma is created by Chris himself. I can't even blame my parents on it, which is an interesting. I feel like a lot of people cannot relate to that.
It's true. Although I should say, like after like the eighth year of therapy, you're kind of like you're bored with your own therapist and yourself.
That's true.
Like, it's
That's
your parents true. Again. You're like, ah, come on. Truly, I had this moment.
Just throw me a curveball where you're like, just I can't talk.
Else. Now, are just be you, like, oh, it was the clown that you like saw at the fucking state fair. Like, that's where all this that, is. Has just, to, like,
it has to it be up. Deeper. It has to be deeper. Are always, you, are you, you're not from New York though, right? Are you from, I know you lived in Montreal, but you're not Canadian, are you? You are.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you so mum about that?
It's a good question. I have been having a lot of conversations with my wife about how we need to make a run for the border and I need to get them in as refugees. Except she refuses.
You did not bless your bride with a green card or a passport?
You can't. I could not.
Why?
I can only apply for her residency permit and then ultimately green card from within the state of Canada. We would have to be living there for her to get citizenship.
Looks like it's time to get a nice little two-bedroom condo in downtown Edmonton.
Oh, exactly what I was thinking. The top of my list is Edmonton, you know? That's the right latitude. That's the right latitude for where I really want to be.
Calgary is available as well for you, I'm sure, but I just, you know, I don't think that the scene's quite as good.
I kind of like Calgary. Nothing is worse than Edmonton. Sorry, Edmonton stands out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you had to pick, you would pick Calgary. Although, you know, our bro Tyler Brulé is little known fact from Winnipeg, which I feel like is the best fun
what,
fact about
what
Tyler
do you Brulé. What do you know about Tyler Brulé? Have you had a lot of dealings with him, or you just know him from his work?
I mean, it's. I feel like we've. I hope. How to phrase this? I don't know as much as I'd like.
Has society moved past the need for Tyler Brulé?
Never.
Is he like a makeup personality, or is it is that a drag name?
He's a famous drag performer from Edmonton. He is the founder and editor-in-chief of Monocle, which last week he writes this really kind of classically out of touch letter from the editor style column every Sunday for their newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
He used to write that for the Financial Times, but he kept plugging his clients, so they had to pull it. So, which I think is sick, personally. But
smoke him if you got him. Like, if you got that kind of gig, like...
I agree. He wrote last week, he basically wrote, like, a cop's rule. He basically told his story about the cops coming to some gathering they were having and being very nice to him and all his rich white friends and how... Yeah. We need to discuss how cops are not that bad. It's basically what my takeaway from
is this a satirical column?
No. His whole thing feels satirical because it's so out of touch.
It's not. He doesn't possess sarcasm being a Canadian native. So sarcasm is
That's true.
Sarcasm is very hard for us to pick up. It's like a language that we just can't really get our brains around. I say this totally candidly. We can't do it. I have a hard time with sarcasm as well. Truly. Mm. So Tyler Brulé, the story of him, and what I will share with you if in the event that you don't know it, everything Chris said is also true. I would add his real name is Tyler Brule.
Like Steve Brule.
Yeah, like Steve Brule.
Oh, the only Damn. Thing funnier than being named Brule is to intentionally change it and add an accent mark on that E to make it a little bit more spicier.
He added the little chapeau, the U, and an accent on the E. His dad was Mark Brule or something, who was like a Canadian football player. And they're from like, you know, the middle of Canada is essentially like our, you know, like energy. It's like our Dallas. It's like our you know, Oklahoma oil fields. It's not, you know, cosmopolitan, mm-hmm. you know.
I appreciate the level of reinvention that he has gone through.
It's a complete Gatsby. So he, the getting shot in Afghanistan in the leg, which some dispute if that even happened, creating wallpaper, moving to London. Damn. I think
not
Tyler
unlike
Relay
Megan
Thee
Stallion,
like cops, because Tyler Relay has never spent any time in America. He's only encountering cops in Canada, London, and like Geneva, where he lives now. No, he doesn't even live in Geneva. He lives in fucking St. Moritz. Like, what are the cops doing in St. Moritz?
Yeah,
they're not profiling you for driving while black. I can tell you.
No, the police force in St. Moritz is probably small and unfocused.
I've been treated very well by the mounted police. I don't know what all the the hubbub is about.
I mean, I think you have a very good point there. But when you're the head of a gigantic media corporation, you should be able. I mean, I don't know what kind of workplace environment they have there, but it seems like the kind of place where you can't really tell him shit. You know what I mean? Is the vibe? Because if Jason said some shit like that, I would crack. I would be like, bro, we can't do this.
No,
like,
this is bad for business.
We need no men as well as yes men.
Yeah,
everybody does. Tyler Bray does not have that. He has structured his entire company. I think he owns 50% of it. I mean, he's doing whatever the fuck he wants. And for that reason, I am forced to admire him, because he has a tremendous amount of chutzpah that I don't. I mean, he's incredibly out of touch, but I think maybe it's not sarcastic, but maybe it's a put on. I don't know. I mean,
anything's
possible.
I can't tell. I mean, I love the whole thing. I loved that they, when everybody else was making websites, they were like, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to have a terrestrial radio station. You know,
fucking
it's like,
me too.
It's like that shit. And it worked to some extent. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all, I mean, I think that time of Monocle being like this thing is kind of over now. It's settled into it just being like a good, solid business. I think the spike where it was like truly influencing things is over. But that's the way magazines, that's just how things work at this point.
100%. You have listen, we started the magazine because of Tyler Brule.
Really? Racket. So, yes, let's talk about the magazine. Are the co-proprietor of Racket.
Co-proprietor. So, David Shaftel and I, longtime friends, short-time entrepreneurs, founded this thing together. He serves as our editor, and I'm our publisher, like 4 years ago. And we did it after a lot of years of friendship. We used to, like, watch tennis, play tennis. We would do kickboxing together. It was very butch, our relationship, always. We would sort of go out and, you know, get drunk at Johnny's bar a lot. And one day I had read this thing, and we'd love tennis. We love, you know, we would share stuff. Like, you know, on occasion you would read like Ashley Vance writing something amazing in like, you know, Grantland about whatever, Victoria Azarenka, or like Wes Morris, or, you know, a few writers here and there would tackle it, or somebody would do an amazing, you know, like thing. And we'd be like, fuck, why isn't there like some center of gravity around this? I bet we could do something. What should that something be? And then I actually read about Tyler Brule being all about that magazine life and being like, I don't care about your millions that are going to digital traffic. I don't care about your scale. I don't need it. We're going to make a print magazine and I am going to reach 100,000 people, but those 100,000 people are all going to pay $20 for an issue of the magazine. And by the way, they're going to buy some $800 Japanese umbrella that I curated. And I was kind of like, this guy, that guy.
He's on some shit. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think that I do think that Racket fills a void, and I feel like traditionally tennis is like a sport and an activity that does have a higher net worth individual.
Pun intended.
That is willing to pay that price, especially for something that they might not be able to. That kind of information is not available anywhere else. You guys stand alone to me. I mean, there's nothing that touches you. And I think that is the true, like, that's when you really fill a hole in a market is what
sure.
I'm trying to say.
Yeah, completely. I think, you know, just total transparency. Like, I don't think we're at all geniuses. I'm shocked that nobody else is fucking with this, honestly. Like, nobody else has figured out the tennis needs like a whole bunch of stuff because there's an underserved market. And like, yeah, there are a bunch of rich people who will pay a premium for anything.
Another good pun.
But also there's like a bunch of cool people who play the sport who kind of like it. I mean, look, I'm looking at your Instagram. Like, who's speaking to you? Who's inviting you to events? Who's like curating you or designing shoes with you or doing that kind of stuff? So we kind of saw the opportunity to kind of like hide in a monocle casing something that's a little bit more like a hype beast. You know, and maybe that's a dated reference, but like, you know, the high snobs of the world and these places that are sort of transacting on culture and talking to a younger audience, like nobody has thought to connect the dots with that in this sport. Like tennis has us basically. And well, then like basketball has 400 of these.
Yeah. Things. Well, we've talked about this. I mean, you and I've talked about it because we've been friends for years and we've talked about business a lot. And I just don't, why to me, tennis is so ripe to be running. You know what I mean? Where these the big sports corporations are pumping money into it and making great stuff, and there's a you know it's just it's the barrier of entry is fairly low, I think, price wise, compared to a lot of sports for kids. So why do you think that isn't happening? Is it because of the traditional way people see it from afar that it's like a country club sport?
Maybe, although you know tennis, and this is one of the things that we try to hit hard. Because like the truth is, we don't want to be alone. We don't want to be like the only sort of, I don't want to call ourselves cool, but we want to be like among a brethren of people who are writing and creating and making cool stuff. Because then it wouldn't feel lonely, but then also it could kind of prove the thesis, right? It could prove the market exists. So I think for us, like one of the things we try to hit hard is this notion that like, oh, tennis used to be fucking dope. And it used to be basically free. Like the public tennis court boom of the 70s wasn't a bunch of people playing tennis in private clubs and all whites, right? It was like people getting out there after they like saw Jimmy Connors or like Chris Evert and buying, you know, Walmart rackets and just having kind of doing it. And tennis is a little harder than a lot of sports. So it's not something that you can like super easily pick up, which
Jason knows that all too well.
Jason, have you been trying to get out there?
Jason's a good player. Jason and I play, we play probably 3 or 4 times a week right now.
It's true.
I love what I'm hearing.
Jason's very tall, so he has an interesting approach to get to the game. He's 6'10".
Six nine.
I'm sorry, I was giving the basketball height. But so
your friend or our mutual friend Stretch Armstrong, known NYC DJ veteran, him and I are pretty much the same exact body and height.
Wow. I mean, he's formidable. He's a good player, but more than anything else, he really uses his like length in a good way.
See, that's the problem, Jason. I am obviously a greater athlete, but Jason has his approach is just so different that it's hard for me to make headway. You know, he can get to everything without a lot of physical work.
Well, I think we're going to need to get on a court together. So,
absolutely,
you would like to see me beat Chris in person, is what you're saying?
Sure. Yeah.
But so you're saying though that the sport is, I mean, how can it be democratized? Like, how does that actually happen? Is it by people like us just playing and talking about it?
Honestly, I think that's part of it. I mean, I think the unlike most other sports, like tennis is in this weird little category. So the sport is hard. We just talked about that, but lots of shit's hard, you know? So like people figure it out. What I would say is kind of the bigger question mark is like, it's not big enough that everybody jumped on it and was like, oh shit, there's a bunch of money we can make here, and making it cool and making it democratized and making all the merch and all the access is just a no-brainer. And it's also not quite niche enough or new enough for people to feel like they discovered it, right? Like UFC all of a sudden is like a thing, and it's just people beating themselves up in a cage. I am not, you know, I'm sure it's hard, but like it was a new sport that happened in our lifetimes. Like
that's totally, and that's rare. I mean, that's rare.
Yeah. And like, I think for tennis, it's kind of been around long enough and people kind of wrote it off. But the truth is like the people who run the sport have zero imagination. So all it takes, and we've already seen, you know, and I think our existence is kind of speaks to this, like all it takes is for a few people to kind of show like, oh, this can work. Here's how. And then, you know, because I shouldn't say we're the only people in the whole space. Like there's now some podcasts, certainly a lot of companies that are like startups, whether it's clothing or shoes or merch or whatever, who are kind of recognizing the opportunity. There's a couple, they're on the up. And like, all it takes is a little bit of a cohort. And then all of a sudden you go to the US Open and you look around the media room and it's not like a bunch of dusty guys from, you know, London, which is mostly what it is now, like asking sexist questions of the players, all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, there's the guy from GQ. There's the guy from Deadspin, RIP, yeah. You know, you know, the new iteration of Deadspin or whatever it is. Like, we're close to having that actually. And I think when that happens, it's going to see its sort of potential. Like, I don't know that it'll ever be the NBA, but it doesn't need to be. All it needs to be is this thing that people realize is fun and has always been on the right side of gender, race, and
in a lot of ways, like trans, right?
Like, tennis has actually been pretty progressive, and that's a cool thing about it, and we can sort of beat the drum a little, so why not?
I was gonna say that. I think that's something very interesting about tennis, too, is that I feel like, and I don't think they get exactly the same shine, but I feel like women's tennis has always been very close in equality to men's as far as coverage mm-hmm. goes.
Yeah, probably out of any sport I can think of.
The TV coverage is big. The stars, like, we know their names. We know what they look like. And it, to me, it's like, it actually seems very skill-based. Like, there's one Anna Kournikova. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you're a sex symbol. We want you in the cover of FHM. It's like mostly merit-based in a way that I feel like the WNBA, no one cares.
No one does care. And I don't know why, although I don't really watch basketball in any form, so I can't speak to it. But I can tell you, part of it is like, see it, be it, right? Like, so like, you know, tennis has had 20 years on most of these sports. Like, really, soccer for women didn't come into their own until the 96 Olympians. Yeah. So like, that's part of it, which is just like, how do you bake in enough sort of runway so that eventually it becomes cool and competitive and there's enough. But I think also like for women in any, like tennis now gets like the fourth or fifth best athletes in America because it's hard. And it doesn't necessarily have like the easiest road to hoe. Like, if you're the 100th best NBA player or NFL player, you are making millions of dollars. If you're the 100th best tennis player, you're barely breaking even and making 50K a year, right?
Mm. Yeah, actually, I think that part of it is interesting.
It's not nothing.
Because, no, but I mean, I think that the kind of the story of like the journeyman tennis player is something that I love, like a guy. Sure. It's like being in a band that makes it later in their career. Like you put out four records and for whatever reason, the fifth record is the one that hits. But making a living, it's like, I feel like tennis, the top players are making millions of dollars in the way that like every basketball player is a fucking millionaire.
Totally. So if you're a kid and you're a guy and you're a good athlete, you know, you're getting filtered out usually from playing tennis. So then, but if you're a woman, it's like, oh, well, I mean, in my case, I wasn't ever going to be good enough to play pro, but I knew I could get a free college education. And so tennis for me was like, oh, this is like actually a road. And I'm seeing people on my television who are making something approximating what a dude can make. And they're playing and sweating and, you know, to your point, merit-based, like they're busting their asses and it's entertaining and it's great. So I think the sport, you know, and obviously we can talk about like how and why and who did it. And cause it was a lot of hard work exactly 50 years ago, like with the creation of the tour, creation of Title IX, these things are all related. But the truth is like, I've always grown up watching it. So it's been normalized for me. So now of course, like I would want to go and, you know, get the next generation of kids. So I think part of it is that too, which is just like, you know, it's about representation. And again, making it cool. Like, I want more people to play tennis because I think it's cool. And I actually think it's sort of democratized in a way that's really, really, really great. And I think tennis teaches you a ton of stuff about, you know, getting you're out there alone. It's extremely pugilistic. And I think, again, you can play it when you're 90 years old or five. And I think that's...
Yeah, that's... That, I mean, know. That's also...
I'm not going to let my kid play football, I can tell you that, and, like, get CTE by 26.
Yeah, no, that's not. I think that is the future for sure as far as sport goes. But I do think out here, at least in California or in LA, I mean, the places that we usually play are too busy right now. Like it's too, you can't get a reservation in Griffith Park. You can't. And I think that is, it's also, you know, I feel like this moment should be harnessed because it is the socially distant sport.
100%. It's interesting you mentioned that. So those Vermont Canyon courts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like every time we go out there, we're like meeting. We had two people, our creative director and one of our photographers, just kind of like met each other because they were wearing racket shirts. And then we like got some, but neither of them really contributed to us before that, but they were fans and we got them. Like, there's a group, there's communities that people feel like they can tap into. And now, to your point, like, yeah, of course, everybody should be playing a sport that's like socially distanced and safe and allows you to get outside and not, you know, be confined within your four walls. Same thing's happening in New York. From what I can tell, it's happening in a lot of places. So I'm hoping like the resurgence of the public tennis court kind of like battler is on the up, because I think for me, that was always what the sport was about. Like, I don't give a shit who's ranked top 10. Most people I know don't. They couldn't even name any of the players. Do you need to follow the NBA playoffs to like enjoy a pickoff game? No. So why should you have to like, why does tennis make you feel like you have to like have the, oh, this is my string and this is my grip size? And it's like, it doesn't matter. I can tell you, you're not good enough for that to matter. I'm not good enough for that to matter.
Get
a racket off the shelf and go run
around.
That's
interesting that you say that, because a lot of listeners of this podcast ask us about gear. And I'm like, I don't fucking know, guys. I buy what I buy what I like, and maybe somebody told me about it. Maybe I just like it. Like, I go to Racket Doctor, I go on tenniswarehouse.com, and I fucking buy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you're also Nike Hive, so I feel like you're up on the latest releases.
I love to be up on latest stuff. The problem with Nike tennis that I find is I can't find it anywhere. Like, it's hard to buy it. Like, I can't, it's if you, unless you go to Nike.com, it's kind of hard to buy.
And most of it is, I think Nike fell off in the tennis realm and ceded a lot of ground to Adidas, to be totally honest. But I feel like I do have some pretty good recommendations if you're ready for something.
We don't talk about the stripes on this podcast.
Yeah, we don't talk about Adidas. I've actually seen you in the full Palace Adidas kit, and it looks great on you, and I will give you a pass for that, because that's a special product. Mm-hmm. But we are checks over stripes on this podcast. It's official.
I mean, I respect it. What I would say that is, more than anything else I recommend, is get something that will make you feel boss. And for me, most of that is not tennis clothes. And unless you're wearing like marking sneakers, wear whatever fucking shoes you want. I am a big proponent in like, don't let the barrier to entry be some like sort of arbitrary thing. Cause like, let me tell you, nobody in tennis is dressing cool. Nobody.
That's actually true. That's true.
But I wear mostly skateboard gear. Patterson hooked us up with a bunch of merch, and it's the most comfortable workout gear that I own. So I mostly wear that when I play tennis. The Palace Adidas collab notwithstanding, truly. And like, I'll wear anything that makes me feel like I'm
confident, basically
excited to be out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
and for me, that like, that's 9/10 of it, because I just want people to sort of like get off their couch. I mean, I could like go real nerdy about like gear and stuff, but I think the truth is like, your racket is not going to matter, although, you know, get something that doesn't feel too heavy. I got a lot of my guy at the New York City establishment. This is like the Racket Doctor, although not quite as cool. If you're in LA, go to the Racket Doctor. If you're in New York, you know, I go to, sadly, Paragon Sports is one of our only options. And my guy there, Ari, who strings rackets, I'm like, hey, Ari, what's happening in here? He's like, oh, all these finance guys are buying this Roger Federer Wilson 97. And this thing is like about 1,000 pounds. And people who don't play tennis are trying to wield this thing. And I see them out on the court. Like, their like arms are falling off because they think it looks cool and they can't hold it. So I would say it's something that you can actually swing over your head.
So Jason is fine with his Bape Wilson collaboration, right?
Yes. I mean, okay. Yes.
Great. I make fun of him for it, but he's beating me. So I guess maybe he chose
well,
right.
You know, some people who are stronger than you, Chris, are able to wield the heavier rackets, and they can get a little bit more torque on the ball. You'll pick it up eventually, I think.
Jason, those twigs that you call arms, I don't see any strength in there, but you do have something going on. I can't figure out what it is.
I mean, I think you just said it. It's torque. It's torque.
Mm-hmm. What I find most valuable personally is the Thorlow tennis sock.
Whoa, old school throwback. That's my grandpa brand.
My dad wore those too, but I wear them to run in, and I just realized that running, my feet are just so destroyed from running that like when I'm playing tennis, I need to wear like a sock that's specialized to like make my feet feel good.
Walk us through what this sock feels like, please, Chris.
Well, the thing about them is they're really thick. Like they're thick in a way that you're like, this seems weird, but then that padding really protects the toes and the heel when I'm just, you know, just split stepping into a powerful backhand, you know, to the left baseline. Mm-hmm. I need the socks matter, and they matter when I run. And I realize that socks are a thing that people overlook, I think, if you're on your feet or you use your feet a lot for exercise.
Don't sleep on a squishy sock.
Exactly.
you're not put off by the triple reinforced toe and heel. In fact, that's the feature, not the bug.
That's the no. I honestly, I swear by it. I wear Thorlow socks to play tennis or to run. If I'm lifting weights and stuff, it doesn't matter as much. But yes, I swear, and they're only $11, which isn't that bad.
I'm speechless. I mean, I feel like I haven't heard the name Thorlow since probably 1984. And the fact that you're keeping him in business, hats off.
It's
crucial.
I think it's a bigger thing in the running community, to be honest with you. I think that's where they have a stronghold. But my dad wore them growing up, so that's why I was so familiar with them.
I think in the tennis world, they're probably part of the old guys' rule hive of, you know, the 60, 70, and up crowd who, you know, the joints are all fucked up and those thick boy socks really help them out.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you who's rocking the Thorlows in New York City. It's everyone 79 and older on the Central Park clay courts who get there at 6 a.m. and just squat on the courts for 4 hours. Those guys are rocking Thorlows.
Ooh, I sense a little venom in your words right there.
You know, if anything, it's jealousy because these guys have cracked the code. They wake up early. They get 4 hours on the court. They're in their Thorlows. I mean, they kind of hog the courts for the rest of us, but like they're living their best lives and they're not spending a ton of money on, you know, a private club membership. And they're keeping the sport alive in a way that I'm like actually kind of like tip of the cap to you gentlemen. So if anything, I'm jealous that they have figured this out.
What is your go-to, like what are the brands that you find yourself drawn to? Because that's what people ask us about all the time, because I think we're so brand loyal in other ways that they want us to take a hard stance on tennis gear.
Well, actually, before when you do that, can you guess just by our personalities what brand of rackets that we use?
100%. You're a Yonex. Am I right, Jason?
Wow.
Is that true?
Yes.
Wow. I feel like when we were getting our birth chart read, I feel seen AF.
Yeah. I mean, you might be like head rising, but you're definitely.
Woo! Okay. What are the characteristics of a Yonex boy?
It's like a missile. If you're a 6'9" guy with a lot of torque and you're looking for a lot of action, then you're going to be drawn to that very unique square frame. Mm-hmm. All of the big men I know, including Stretch Armstrong, but another friend of ours, Vicente Munoz, who looks like he's winding up like a rubber band to like serve, they like the Yonexes. It feels like a very powerful racket that I feel like not very many people can actually wield, but also it's kind of an insider's choice. Like it's a bit of a deep cut, you know, like you wouldn't go to that first and foremost.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, couldn't ask for a better response. Thank you.
Wow. I hope you feel seen, because
I feel seen. I feel validated. I feel rewarded for
this representation is important.
Okay. And then loudmouth Chris, what racket do you think somebody like him would be using?
I mean, I would hope, knowing his personality, that he would be smart enough to go with a head, because I actually think those are the best.
But you know he's not using the head.
What'd you say?
I suspect you're with a Wilson. But I'm
No. I'm a Babolat guy.
Oh, shit. What are you doing with the Babolat, man?
I don't know. I like it.
We don't fuck with Babolats around here.
Ooh. Why not?
Are you the team Babolat, the white one?
Yeah.
That's the only acceptable Babolat.
Wow.
Why do we not fuck with Babolat on this side? Yeah. Did they get canceled?
They pull their advertising or something? What happened?
I'm trying to think of what the best ancillary is. Like, it's kind of it's like the Toms.
Damn. You're in. Damn.
Toms shoes we're talking about.
Yeah. I feel like you're like, you know.
This is quickly becoming my favorite podcast we've ever recorded. Just because I know how much that must be hurting Chris at a core cellular level.
No.
I've also seen Chris play tennis, and he's a better tennis player than a Babolat user would indicate. So I think it's time to level up, Chris. If anything, I'm seeing you for the person you are going to be. Your star sign is both a predictor of where you are going as well as a document about where you've been. And I think you're headed to better waters once you get rid of that Babolat.
We boycott the failing Babolat team.
But I have great pink head grips on them too. So it feels like I add a little personality, you know?
I mean, what better place for those head grips on a new head racket?
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, when we get off the pot, you can send me the connect to the head PR and I'll request.
Yes, happy
know,
to.
I'll,
happy
I'll
to.
Request
I had pieces. Actually one more follow-up question to that. I was listening to you guys, I was listening to your podcast earlier in the week, and you were making mention of being being around New York City and seeing all these people riding around on their bicycles with their tennis rackets in their backpack, and that was in exciting and inspiring for you to see. And then you I don't remember who made a comment, but saying that a lot of the people, of course, have two rackets in their bag, and you had some comments on that. And would you believe that Chris Black is a player that shows up to the courts with two rackets at all times?
I will salvage Chris. On
please,
this
please tell me your unvarnished thoughts on people who have multiples of the same racket who are not professional players.
I most certainly will. And as a matter of fact, if you go back and listen to that episode of the Racket Magazine podcast, I was talking about this with my co-host Renee Stubbs, who is a 6-time Grand Slam champion, and she made the comment that it's absurd to see people who
absurd
are not
is a good word
professional
for it.
Carrying around more than one racket. And I took umbrage. I took immediate umbrage because not only am I one of those people who brings more than one racket, I think people who only bring one racket to the courts are telling on themselves. So
because they don't feel that they have the power to potentially break a string.
That is exactly right. People who bring one racket, that one racket.
They don't believe in the torque that they possess inside of them.
Exactly.
It's torque. Maybe they don't play enough to be on the edge about one set of strings. Maybe they got one set broken in just the way they like, but that also means they're living on the edge because they're starting to fray a little bit. So
see,
that's
all right. I have a follow-up question for you then, Torque Thompson. What? How many strings are you breaking on a weekly basis?
I mean, let's be honest. With string technology where it is right now, Jason, not many.
Not many, you say? Wow, I'm shocked to hear that.
I mean, Monday I broke a string. This is just days ago. I got one out of commission. So thank God I brought two.
Did you get it caught in the door or something like that? Or how did...
Was it a
cat walked across it or something?
That's right. They're so tight. You know, I only use cat good, as you can imagine. Like, and then I step on them like Bjorn Borg to get the tension exactly right. No, I was defending the conceit of bringing two rackets because I felt like it showed some dedication to the sport. Whereas Renee, who can be a little dismissive of the recreational player, was scoffing at how absurd it was. And so if anything, I was the voice of the people disabusing her of the notion that people needed to.
The voice of the people who can afford multiple rackets that cost hundreds of dollars.
No, she's not buying rackets, baby. She's in the industry.
It's flow team, baby.
It's flow team only.
Well, then walk us through maybe some of these perks of being a tennis media elite. What's going on?
That's right. I mean, there aren't as many as I'd like, Jason, and I actually on a daily basis kind of take umbrage. I'm like, why am I not getting the Hot Lava Nike releases of the reissue for the Air Challenges? Why did I not get the Palace kit soup to nuts when Adidas came out with it? You know, like,
is there something cooler than racket? I don't think there is.
I got a ball machine that was extremely cool.
Damn, that's pretty sick.
During this time, ball machine was dope. I really want, if we're going to swag out, one of the things I really want is kind of tennis related, but more just like athletic related, which is those Hyper Ice booties you can put all over your leg to circulate cold air around them for recovery.
Are you a Hyper Ice or a Theragun user for recovery?
Not for the low, low price of nothing.
Let me tell you something. I was told I was going to get a free one for like 2 years and I didn't buy one. And then I finally was like, fuck this, I'm going to buy one. And it's the Theragun, it's a must have for recovery.
Really?
It's changed my life. I use it twice a day. Jason's a big user as well.
Twice a day?
I use it way more than anyone, but usually on other people, not on myself. I give and I give. Between my girlfriend and my life partner Chris Black, I spend a lot of time vibrating those fat ass thighs of his.
Well, I need you to get I need to get in between my shoulder blades. You know, I can't get that. So the rest of it I can usually get, but between the blades, I'm really
Got it.
I'm doing a lot of scat push-ups with my trainer, you know, so it stays tight back there, you know.
Yeah. You need a tight mid back, and then you need to decompress with an extremely high powered specific massager, which I don't have at the desk. So
exactly. Well, hopefully somebody hears that, you know.
Maybe Santa Claus will bring one this year.
Yeah,
I mean, listen, I was listening to another episode of your show, and you guys were, I think it was, you guys were stunting on some sweet green, and then lo and behold, I see on Jason, I'm like, wow, this works. You guys are really pushing the
needle.
Well,
Jason's a known sweet green influencer for decades. I mean, since the beginning.
Nothing to do with How Long Gone. This is just, they no, had to ride him early.
Unfortunately, that has nothing to do with How Long Gone, and I end up paying for the salads more often than I would like.
I'm an independent foodfluencer. It has nothing to do with this podcast specifically, but it does not hurt.
It doesn't hurt.
Maybe it's time to cross the beams. I'm just saying.
Well, the problem is that as his co-host, I'm more of a, like, let's not eat guy, so it doesn't really gel, you know what I mean? Like, the synergy isn't really there, but we're working on that. We're working on that.
I want to follow up with something that you and I talked about a while ago, Chris, which is in the wellness space. So I don't think it's too much of a bridge too far, which is the Peloton versus SoulCycle tribal affiliations. Because, as you probably know, Peloton is now on like a 3-month back order for everybody who wants to cycle at home. But the SoulCycle bike isn't. Do you get one? Do I need one? Should we be talking with this, or are we
actually
done? Where are we with this?
I think I'm going to use Peloton for the first time today, actually, because where I'm staying, there's two Pelotons in the gym. And I've never tried it, but as a former SoulCycle, I've done over 300 SoulCycle classes, embarrassingly, in my lifetime. I don't want to talk about how much that costs. And, the problem is, and this is where SoulCycle fucked up, is that it's not the brand for at home. Peloton is. SoulCycle is not that. It's just like no one even considers that to me. It's like Peloton only, and if it's on back order, I'll just wait is the way it feels to me.
Wow.
Chris, you spent about $10,000 on SoulCycle. Sorry to interrupt. Carry on.
I wouldn't. Yeah, but I mean, look at me. I wouldn't do I wouldn't buy a Peloton, I don't think, but I do think it's the blue chip brand of home bicycles.
I agree.
It did feel like SoulCycle was a little too late, too little with that entry in the market. But I wanted to keep my brand loyalty because I too dropped a bunch of money on SoulCycle, and my wife banned me when she figured out how often I was going.
Well, I think the Peloton, I mean, the thing is that to me, I still think Peloton is like a fat rich guy thing, you know, to like have.
They're not athletes, are they? I mean, the people who use Peloton.
I think Peloton, I like.
It's fatties only. We know that.
I like spinning only as an alternative to running when my body is just feeling destroyed to get cardio. That's like, I still get sweaty as fuck and feel good after, but it's definitely not the same as a run.
It's a lower impact.
Yeah. But I mean, honestly, like to me, SoulCycle, it got to the point where it was kind of easy. Like if I didn't take the heart, if I didn't like,
Jesus,
like find the real teacher, like I know there are teachers that are hard. I could do it and be like, I'm sweating and I feel good, but like I could do that again. I would only do the hour class on the weekend.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
Chris was nationally ranked.
I don't think I quite realized how nationally ranked at SoulCycle you were. So now I really need to reassess.
I mean, this is literally the opposite of a flex because SoulCycle is so lame inherently, but it weirdly was something that I think also it was like right. It kind of, I was doing it and then I kept doing it when I was getting sober, and I think it really helped me. And it was like a program. I could go in there and do, I don't know. It just, I think I have a special feeling for it when I know it's actually lame.
Oh yeah. Well, for me, it filled a gap between like really intense tennis matches that are harder and harder to come by nowadays, just cause I'm like a mom who doesn't have that much free time. And then also like, I don't club anymore.
You mean, are you talking about Jason's industry of EDM?
You're talking about ClassPass, or are you talking about One Oak?
It's a great point. Butter really.
Whoa! She was it, Caitlin. We were at Butter on Mondays together. I didn't see you there. But we.
I
were
don't
there.
Know. Maybe I was. I don't know. I was like behind the velvet rope. I don't know how we missed each other. But
no, I was in the back with Mary Kate doing coke. So I don't know. Yeah. Must have missed you.
But ships in the night. But I feel like I go get music into a large sweaty room through like people getting married now, which is like kind of on the wane because I'm 40 and You know, so for me, it was like, oh, this is a really fun way to listen to some loud ass music in a room.
Oh, yeah, I never thought of it that way.
Me neither. That's a great point. And I think that I actually, the teacher that I loved, who like we're friends now, he's the only one I ever found that had good music.
Strings?
No, no, no. This guy, Parker.
Oh, I liked Parker's classes. He did have good taste. I went to many of his classes.
He played
I didn't see you there.
He would play shit like, I was like, damn, this motherfucker really is on it. Like, he's like looking up. But he also, the thing about those guys is you want them to do a little bit of crate digging, but you really only want to hear the best of the hits. And that is what makes you an exceptional Soul Cycle teacher. Like, when you play 100%. You play the right Drake song, it might not be the newest one, but you play the best one. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is the real win.
And also, for me, the final cool down song really is a chance to shine.
Yeah, agreed.
I went to one that played some kind of like acoustic guitar mess, and I was like, never again. And the whole rest of the class I had loved, but that was the finisher, and I was like, we're not on the same page.
No, I need Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Like a slower Charlie XCX maybe, but certainly not like acoustic guitar. I don't want organic instrument in my entire Soul Cycle experience.
I agree with you, and I know Jason hates organic instruments as an EDM influencer, so we know where he stands on that. No bongos in his Soul Cycle. I do think the Peloton, I want to try, because a few friends I have that have gotten it, like one of my friend Emil is swearing by it. He's like, dude, I've lost weight. I feel amazing. Like, this thing is really working for me, you know?
I can't figure out where I'm going to put it in a New York City apartment, but I'm closer than ever to convincing my wife that I need one.
Well, I think you should kick your son out and make him sleep on the couch or whatever. His room. I mean, he's too young to know, you know?
He won't remember. I think, you know, we all have to make sacrifices and this will be his.
Yeah, exactly. Sacrifice is important. I forgot that you were a Soul Cycle because, you know, at Barry's, the music is historically so bad. Like, there's never been good music at Barry's Bootcamp in my entire life. And I've gone 200 times.
How?
Because I just think it's Soul Cycle is rhythm based, so like there's so much effort put into music, whereas Barry's is just like we play music while you lift weights and run.
I think for me, one of the things actually, when you guys are you coming back to New York ever? Or do you just live on the West Coast now, Jason? I know you're based on the West Coast, but are you
I'll
done
back.
For New York?
Or
you
no,
jury's out.
I'll be back. It's going to be later in the season, but I'll be back.
Well, I'm asking for a specific reason because one of the things we've been doing all summer is we've been gathering people at our public course on the Lower East Side sort of like under the banner of Racket because people who read our magazine or, you know, fuck with their shit in any way just like meeting each other a lot of times. And we kind of took over. We've been colonizing a sort of corner of the Lower East Side public tennis courts under the Williamsburg Bridge because they were supposed to pull down those courts and totally bulldoze the entire East Side Park. But now that
look, we got to get the sweet green in there. Come on,
we got to get sweet green. So Dave, my business partner, in addition to wrapping up the Racket magazine book out August 11th on Peter Books, sold whatever books are sold.
Flex.
Wait, hold. We'll go back to that. I didn't even know that was. Go ahead.
Just bought a giant 1980s breakdance style boombox off of eBay. To take the tunes on the court up a notch.
Mm. Wow.
So we have a little bit of everything. And we got DJ Stretch Armstrong, our mutual friend out there, who's been playing for us upcoming hits off of his new record. So it's actually kind of popping off on a regular basis. So, and I want you to be a part of it because I think you'd really like it.
So you're saying
it's music-based.
You're saying that's more fun than me and Jason playing alone at 3 p.m. in Glendale with a Beats Pill playing Wilco. Okay. I mean, whatever, I guess. I mean,
I was
say
ready
so.
To endorse that until you said Wilco. Because they're an instrument, man.
I don't want
Jeff Tweedy with a fucking guitar. If you're going to play me music, it's got to be beat based.
We don't listen to any music when we play because I want to hear Jason grunting when I'm making him run to the net. You know, that's really what it's about. Well, I'm glad that. Wait, tell me about the book. That's very exciting. I love books.
Yeah. So, David, I love that you love books.
Love books.
David, my co-founder, just finished editing our first book with this very cool lefty house called Repeater, which is based in London. And it's basically the best writing from the first 3 years of the magazine. So
it's all the hits.
All the hits, just the hits, like the. Best of the best, cream of the crop. And he was really proud of himself because he got Billie Jean King to give us an endorsement on the front cover, but then Stephen Malkmus to give us an endorsement on the back cover.
Wow. Damn, that's big boy blurbs. Who's got the Malkmus connection?
I mean, apparently he found our magazine somehow. I don't know how.
I could see Malcolmus being a player.
Apparently he's a fanatic of tennis. So for men,
we got to get Malcolmus. I need to interview Malcolmus for the magazine. I think this is where this is going.
Sold.
Damn.
When can you file?
That's don't talk to me like an editor. I'm getting triggered. That's really cool, though. That's exciting. So the book is out August 11th?
The book's out August 11th. We got a collab coming next couple weeks. I know it's a Checks Not Stripes household, so I won't.
No, but if you have a collaboration coming out?
Yeah, we're reissuing these really old school shoes from the 70s called Forest Hills, which is where the US Open used to be.
They can't look worse than the Jonah Hill Adidas, I'm assuming.
I mean, the Jonah Hill Adidas are not number one, but you got to assume you're dropping an iced coffee at the same time.
Then they look cool.
They look cool because that's really more of a walking one block in Soho kind of shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of, that's actually exactly what I look for in footwear. Like, how does this look on Print Street only is where I'm thinking.
Will I be with like V-Files in the background?
Yeah, exactly.
So cool. Damn. Maybe.
You just get it.
So you guys are reissuing a version of the Forest Hills Adidas shoe.
We got like some like kind of old school Stefan Edberg for the tennis nerds among us who get that Swedish deep cut, sort of like a warm up jacket and sort of some old colorways from the 70s. So I feel like we have, you know,
that's great.
We're trying to make sure people look. Tennis clothes suck. We are trying to, in very small and incremental ways, change that.
Mm-hmm.
But like,
actually,
listen, checks out there, Nike Hive. If you guys are listening, I mean, look, we're open to doing business.
We actually today I got a Lacoste Concepts pair of collaboration shorts that are very nice.
That new creative director at Lacoste is tearing
she's amazing. I don't know, they're just black shorts, but the Lacoste Crocodile is like a reflective. They're nice. They're super simple, but I like would actually wear them. They're 5-inch inseam. You know, we don't like the 9-inch tennis inseam.
No. You're not.
We want to show as much quad as possible, but we need pockets for the balls, you know, so it's a tough thing to find.
Yeah, although I think tennis should embrace the shorter shorts. I think the first reliably sort of accessible brand who does that will find themselves. Sergio Tacchini was kind of doing it. Lacoste are shorter than average, but these tennis guys, they like these long 2B shorts. It's embarrassing. I mean, I don't know if that's a 9-inch inseam or if it's just
not long,
like a no
shorts,
homo thing long for the male tennis players that are just like, I can't show leg, but it's lame.
There's probably a decent amount of that in play.
I mean,
but short shorts are having a peak moment right now for the fellas. You know, since the early 80s, I have not seen this many short.
That's true.
Going on.
And tennis was ahead of the game.
Yes.
So how dare we relinquish this moment? That's
we need to give some credit back to Big Tennis and away from Patagonia for
exactly
for waving the flag of short shorts.
It's true.
I mean, look, until tennis ponies up and reclaims its heritage, I mean, Patagonia is going to have to own it, I guess. I don't know. I'm not pleased.
It's no one's fault but Big Tennis's own.
Tennis slept on their own creation, and I think if anything, this should be a call to arms.
The magazine comes out twice a year, correct?
The magazine comes out
quarterly.
Sometimes, 3 times a year.
How many? Four? Three.
Yeah.
Four. Okay, so it's quarterly.
We have our next issue actually coming out in what day is today? Two weeks.
Very
soon. We got
soon.
A book, a magazine, and some merch.
Is there anything you can tell us? Is there anything you can tell us about the next issue?
Ooh, we got an incredible cover by a music band poster designer called Aaron Lowell, who I think designed the new Muzz logo. You know that new band. He did our cover, and it looks dope as hell, I think. And it's gonna look good on your wall. And it's sort of an homage to the essential worker. We loved the idea of like people putting rainbows in their windows, which is something you saw a lot in New York.
Yeah.
Kids would sort of tip the cap out to the windows. So we wanted something that looked a little bit like that. And we're calling it the Solitary Pursuits issue. So we have a lot of stuff that sort of talks about how interior tennis as a sport is because you're out there alone with your mind. So we got some photographs from Stefanos Tsitsipas, who took a bunch of selfies, who's sort of the young Grecian sort of up-and-comer. We got Andrea Petkovic writing about being on vacation by herself in the Maldives. somebody battling against a wall. Really, the theme was like, you're, whether there's a pandemic or not, tennis is a place where you can sometimes find yourself out there alone, and maybe that's a bad thing, but maybe it's incredibly clarifying.
I smell a Headspace collab.
I also smell Stephen Malcolmus reading racket Headspace. I see a
trifecta. From your mouths to God's ears, gentlemen.
Well, that being said, I wanted to ask, like, for a magazine company nowadays, like, what is the breakdown in terms of revenue coming from now that you're making money from selling the actual magazines, advertising, collabs, endorsements, you know, the podcast? Like, where does it break down, like, you know, percentage-wise, I guess, if you're interested in talking about that?
Yeah. It's actually kind of interesting. We started this thing as a labor of love because we loved print and we wanted to give people something, you know, in their hands that was tactile and that felt like something, you know, and we love Tyler Brulé as where we began the conversation. But I also, you know, hats off to Tyler Brulé. But I also think, like, for us, like, our mission is to disrupt tennis and make it cool. And what we found is that because we're direct to people who buy the magazine, because we are in their ears or, you know, hands with a physical product, we don't need to go through a platform. We don't publish very much on the internet. Like, we just don't believe in, like, finding our articles on Facebook as a good, like, user experience. So we don't do it. And so because of that, we actually have brands that come to us sort of to do advertisement, but that's not really what it is. It's kind of more like brand strategy, because they're like, oh, you guys are doing cool stuff in tennis. Will you help us do cool stuff in tennis? So there's a bunch of stuff that takes, you know, sometimes months and years in the case of this Adidas thing, but it's like, that's more about their effort to reclaim their story and heritage and talk about sort of where tennis goes and how it goes around the world and always has, as in it, instead of being like, oh, this is a cool drop for a thing, we're going to splash it around everywhere. So for us, we find doing a little bit of strategy and storytelling around some of these things when we choose to, is much more sort of like fruitful. And the other thing that we do a ton of, that, you know, hopefully we'll be out in the world with is, you know, anytime we publish something in our magazine, it's sort of the seed for an idea. And between, like, sort of narrative nonfiction podcasts and films and documentaries and stuff like this, like, the sport, as we talked about, doesn't have a ton of footprint everywhere. So we feel like somebody writes something amazingly cool about the tennis boom of the 70s and how, you know, Chris and Martina gave birth to, like, the commerce and the, like, pinup in the 80s. And all of a sudden that can be turned into a film, right? Like, that's how we're thinking about it, because nobody else is really doing what we're doing. We're not interested in, like, oh, this is who's ranked this, or this is what, you know, string to buy, or, you know, hey, this is like how to improve your back end. It's more like, oh, this is, like, the whole culture around it. And since we're here alone, the revenue breakdown actually ends up being about a third between the magazine and sort of these collab / strategy things, and then IP, which is really cool because it means we can sort of, you know, write our own destiny. I used to work for, like, big media companies for my whole career. I know you guys have had many, many, many run-ins with, like, what these big media companies do, how they act. And the truth is, like, they kind of lost the plot a long time ago when they were like, oh, we'll just give away our shit for free and assume that big audiences were meaningful. And the truth is, they're not. Meaningful audiences are meaningful. And if people are onto your shit, then they'll come to your event, they'll buy your shoe, they'll buy your magazine, they'll support your podcast. And that tribe, and they like meeting each other and hanging out, whether it's, you know, on the Lower East Side of New York on a random Tuesday, or, you know, at the Racquet House in Palm Springs, because we happen to pull some cool stuff together. Those two things are totally synonymous. And so to me, like, that tribe is really what we're trying to build, because it means we'll succeed in our goal of making tennis cool. And the money kind of is attached to that in a way that is functional, but hopefully not gross.
No, I mean, I think obviously we've talked about this before, but I think what you guys have going on is special. I think the film, TV, documentary stuff is a huge opportunity just on a, I mean, I think people devour that shit now in a way that hasn't always been the case. And even someone like me, who's not interested in sports really, like, watches 30 for 30s and that kind of shit, because it's just so good. And I think that the Last Dance is the ultimate explanation 100%. Of that. Is like, that was like a cultural thing. I mean, it's obviously the biggest athlete in the world, but it's also like it was a cultural moment. And it was insane. So I think the opportunity to do that for tennis, and what the magazine does as well, and this is what's important, is it's not a service magazine, it's a cultural magazine, you know. Totally. I think that's what makes anything interesting, is like, for most people, they need more context than just like numbers and winners and losers.
Completely right. And I think if you ignore that, like some of my favorite magazines, and I know, Chris, we have a bunch in common. Like I'm thinking of like, you know, Sarah Nicole Prickett's Adult magazine. Like,
yeah, classic.
There are brands, there are storytelling outfits. I mean, look, what you guys are doing, like there are, nothing is ever just about the thing that it's about. Hopefully it's about life and the world and people and, you know, humanity, and not to get too like earnest about it, but like our shit is not about tennis. It's about like using tennis to talk about elitism, using tennis to talk about, you know, globalism, using it to talk about gender, mm-hmm. whatever. And sometimes it's overtly political, and sometimes it's just like, look at some cool shoes in a cool place. But all of it hopefully weaves together to be like, oh, I'm going to Trojan horse some ideas in here and make it about culture. And I think that's what The Last Dance did really effectively. Like, I don't give a fuck about Michael Jordan. I didn't like him when he was in my face all the time. I didn't really like The Last Dance as a sports experience, but as a cultural experience, as a commentary on like race, class, you know, the huge money making of sports in the 90s, and like really the emergence of like super superstars in that way. Like that was, it had so many things to say. And I think that, like anything else, like you don't have to like or fuck with sports to like the idea that culture is pervasive.
But that's, I think that's the reason that I'm attracted to music, even athletes, fashion. It's the personalities that that's what's interesting about it. You know what I mean?
It's like, the friends that we make along the way, you guys.
That's also true. That's also true. Good point, Jason.
Do you think there's any chance that we have a Los Angeles chapter of these racket meetups?
It's as soon as we can get on an airplane.
Okay,
Vermont Canyon, is that your preferred?
We can do a satellite version and just kind of get you guys FaceTime.
We can just send you our Venmo and figure out. Yeah. I don't know how the financials work, but I mean, whatever. I'm sure the day rate will be very respectable. But yeah, we can organize it all for you.
If Adidas wanted to sponsor it as something we could discuss, as long as I personally don't have to wear anything, it's fine.
I'll let them know.
Yeah, let them know. It's fine. It's
sooner not, than later, know. Right?
It's not personal. You know what I mean? It's not personal.
Chris Black's going to need a carve out for his own endorsement deals.
Exactly. You know how it is for us athletes. We have to have to be very specific. Gatorade might get mad. You never know. You know.
Labels out.
What are your thoughts on Gatorade? We've been doing some throwback lemon lime drinking after the games.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been doing some zero sugar Gatorade.
Are you guys mixing your own powder? Like old school?
No, I wish.
No, well, but we were discussing the option of that.
Yeah, we're thinking about bringing a full-on cooler to the court.
Yeah, just like a 5-gallon bucket full of water, and then dumping all that fresh pow pow and gets to chugging.
Jason mixing it like a cauldron. I think so too. I think so. I think it's a good idea for us. I think it's kind of like a vintage flair that we can add. You know?
Yeah. I don't have anything to add to that. I think I'm jealous that I didn't think of it.
Well, who are some of the sexiest tennis players playing tennis right now?
There's one that I really want to talk about a lot, and his name is Benoit Paire.
Benoit Paire. How is that spelled?
Benoit.
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 Benoit Paire, French tennis player. Oh, okay. I'm looking at him right now.
Man, Caitlin, he looks like a bad replay jeans model.
It's quite Diesel, circa 19.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm looking at him right now.
He does have a beard, but it's a little on the thicker side for me.
It's very manicured.
He has a beard oil sponsor.
Yep. How well is he playing?
That's not the right question for Benoit Paire. The question for
Benoit Paire is, it don't matter
what state of mind are you going to encounter a Benoit Paire. What I like about Benoit Paire is he gives zero fucks because he's a lunatic. So when people ask me, who should I watch? I want to like see something amazing. Mm-hmm. What they think they're asking is who's the best. But what I'm going to give them is what's the most entertaining.
Right.
And I'm going to give them Benoit Paire.
I understand that.
Tweeners. He does rope-a-dopes where he will stop trying for a while and then he'll lull his opponent into submission and then like come back and flex at the end of the match. He's doing something completely different than most professional tennis players are doing.
Damn, you're really speaking my language. This sounds right up my alley. And exactly.
That's the kind of player Jason thinks he is. So.
Yeah, I like to have a bit of a drunken style where my casual rebel spirit is taken advantage of and exploited, 100%. and then I strike like the anaconda that I am.
Oh God,
100%. It's like
I don't want to beat my opponent. I want them to be riddled with frustration for losing against
themselves.
Me.
Mm-hmm. And they'll beat themselves. It's exactly what this guy is up to. And if tennis were smart, which is, we've established that it's not, they would figure out how to market him as performance art. Because the other guy like him is Nick Kyrgios, who everyone kind of loves to hate on. And Nick Kyrgios, again, doesn't give a single fuck. If he's in the first round of a tournament where, like, in a town where he doesn't want to be, where he, like, can't party, where he, like, doesn't feel any love from the crowd, he will not try at all. But if he finds himself in, like, a semifinal against Novak Djokovic, he's not going to drop a point. Like, it's nuts.
That's the coolest way to be.
It is. And nobody knows how to talk about him because everybody in tennis is super dusty, and we don't know from other sports how to talk about the various personalities. Because again, like, tennis has only kind of been played by a few very narrow archetypes for the most part. Although that's not quite enough, true enough, just because we've had like a bunch of like
it's been everybody doing the same thing, and then John McEnroe is the one guy who would like yell, and that's all people know.
Yeah. Or like Agassi, you know, with the outfits of Becker, like, you know, impregnating cocktail waitresses. Like, they've been a bunch of cool personalities, women's side just as much as the men. But in the past, like, decade, everybody's, like, super corporate, and, like, everyone, all these big three are kind of, like, falling over themselves to be, like, amazing sports and, like, corporate friendly, and it could not be more boring. So for me, I'm, like, not interested in, like, Roger Federer's, like, you know, gracious post-match speech. I'm interested in, like, Nick Kyrgios getting defaulted because he threw a chair at the umpire.
Same. I'm throwing a chair at the umpire tomorrow.
Also, in some of these Google image photos of our friend Benoit, you know, it doesn't not look like me, I will say.
Jason.
He's got a real lanky, sultry swagger that I would imagine you
Jason
does.
Jason,
all of this is correct.
Jason and sultry should never be used in the same sentence.
He kind of looks like if I fucked Jude Law. Is the vibe that I'm getting.
You're giving yourself so much credit. I have to. Caitlin, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
I can't thank you guys enough. What a fantastic chat.
And I'm excited for the book. That's very cool. And that comes out August 11th, you said?
On Repeater Books. You guys, come join us. East Coast, West Coast, doesn't matter. I want to see you guys in person. Maybe, Chris, if you ever return to New York, you'll always have a place with the Dragon Tribe.
I appreciate
Jason, you're
that.
Welcome.
Thank
you're
you.
You're welcome. Anytime.
No, thank you.
It's been a real pleasure.
We'll talk to you soon, Caitlin. Have a good weekend.
Bye, guys.
Bye.